Hi, Sonia.
Hi, Chris.
How are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks.
Good stuff, good stuff. Firstly, thanks so much for joining me today on the Employer Blend podcast. Really appreciate it. So look, without further ado, you know, it'd be great if you could introduce yourself and Women in Transport. Is that okay, Sonia?
Absolutely. And thanks so much for inviting me to be on the podcast. So I'm Sonia Byers, Chief Executive of Women in Transport. And Women in Transport is a professional network. We're a non-profit. Our mission is very much to support the professional development of women working in the transport sector. But we are open to anyone working in the transport sector. And the way that we support our members is through networking, events, mentoring and professional development. We've got a leadership development program specifically for our women members. And we also have something called the All Party Parliamentary Group for Women in Transport. So we work with peers and MPs across the political spectrum to promote greater gender balance in the transport sector. And we also have a diversity and inclusion bus group. So again, it's a forum of like-minded individuals who work together to promote best practice and greater diversity and inclusion in the sector.
Awesome. That's brilliant. Thanks for that, Sonia. Really appreciate it. So today we're going to be talking about something you're super passionate about. I'm really passionate about as well, mainly for the fact I've got four daughters, and creating change in this part of our world, I think, is just so incredibly important. But it's a topic around that you wouldn't really think that we'd need to be talking about in the year 2022, but we are. But, you know, why is supporting women in the workplace so important in this day and age? And like I say, it's silly that we're talking about it in 2022, but there's still so much change to make, I think, isn't there? So look, before we go into conversation about that, Sonia, just to kind of set the scene, it would be quite nice, if it's all right, you know, for you to maybe just give us a little bit of your backstory. You know, where did your passion for change in this space come from? You know, if we can just rewind back to your teenage years and then going through, you know, just your journey generally. If you can give us a bit of a brief overview to set the scene, that'd be great.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Chris. I mean, I don't know if my story is a bit atypical, but I grew up in a household where it was very gender balanced. So my parents had exactly the same job. They were both nurses and then community psychiatric nurses at the same time. So they had equal pay, and they both actually did two jobs each. They worked full time. And my experience of that was that I had a brother, and I've got an older brother who's 3.5 years older than me. And we were very much a household that worked together. So everything was split equally. We all had to take on our share of the domestic responsibility. Very early on, I was, you know, doing the washing up when I was four, and you know, took to iron, and my brother equally though. And when my mum went to a 9-to-5 job, my brother had gone to high school, and he was the first one home. So he was 11 and I was 7. So he would do the majority of the cooking. And so I grew up with this assumption that that's how households worked. You know, everybody pitched in, and everyone was equal, and a woman could do the same job as a man. And then when I got into transport, quite by accident, and that's probably a whole other story, but I really saw that it was very unequal. I didn't see any women. I didn't see women, very many women around me. I was working sort of an engineering focused area, and there were just very few people like me, and very few actually women of colour as well. And then I, very early in my career, I joined Women in Transport because I was looking for networking, connection and professional development. And that really kickstarted a passion in this area of diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, wow. It's such a powerful story, because I suppose that environment you were brought up in, and that really lovely level playing field, those brilliant role models, again, that were level pegging, you know, that is how the world should be. And I'm guessing that's kind of what lit a fire inside you, you know, to create impact and change in this area, especially when you go from that to an environment where you're looking around, probably feeling a bit lost, thinking this isn't kind of how not even work, isn't how life should be. Life should be, you know, we should be level pegging as a minimum, really, shouldn't we? So moving into our questioning then, Sonia. So it's 2022. Supporting women in the workplace is still so important, and it's something that needs to be done, and massive change still needs to be made. You know, what needs to be done, you know, to support women in the workplace today?
So there are lots of things that can be done, but one of the things that could probably make the most impact is equalizing women's ability to fully participate in the workforce. So there's a really good study that's been done for over a decade now, or it's coming up, it's a decade now, which is the PwC Women at Work Index. And that gives you a really good benchmark of how women's participation in the workforce has evolved over time. And actually, up until COVID, it had been progressing upwards. And then COVID meant that for the first time ever in 2020, the index went backwards. So women's progression went backwards because they were experiencing higher unemployment and things like that. And the 2022 index shows that there has been improvement, actually, that we're starting to get back on track. But what it does highlight is that there's still a massive issue, there's still a massive gap, there's still a way to go. And there's a disproportionate disadvantage for women who have children, because they suffer a motherhood penalty in terms of progression and wages, and additional pressures for women who are from minority ethnic backgrounds, mm-hmm. experience higher unemployment and higher rates of redundancy and things like that. But so some of the practical things that organisations can do, and that we can do as a society, is ensure flexible working is available for everyone, yeah. both men and women, so that actually it enables men to take on more of the domestic load, more of the care and responsibility, regardless of whether that's children or not. Actually, I think increasingly, you know, with an aging population and everything else, we have this sandwich generation who might be looking after parents or other caring needs, and often that falls to women.
Yeah.
The other thing is around how we look at shared parental leave, mm-hmm. as well, and making sure that actually it's equal. Shared parental leave and equally paid. So again, it enables men to take more of that burden and more of that time, so that women aren't losing out by being out of the workplace for extended periods of time and aren't penalised for that. And looking at how we shape policies and job design so that it enables women to fully participate in the workforce. And I appreciate that feels like it's really weighted towards women that have children. But because there is a reality that whether we like it or not, there's a perception that women, regardless of whether they want them or not, will have children at some point.
Yeah.
And that might not happen for everybody, but it impacts on how employers view them.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially if I can imagine, Sonia, if though, you know, the members of the leadership team, you know, people at the layer of business that set policy, and they kind of set culture. It's not just about policy, this is it. I think it's just an innate culture in a business. But if those people haven't got that level of empathy, or maybe they're men that just don't appreciate that, for example, you know, it's quite difficult to drive change, isn't it, in those areas. And that's probably something that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But because I've been looking at various things. Obviously, the gender pay gap is another super, you know, relevant topic to this conversation. And I suppose part of the gender pay gap discussion comes into elements of what you were talking about there. So, you know, there will be, you know, for example, mums that are returning to work that still need a level of flexibility. They're more than happy to take on a full-time job, but might be the school runs, might be the, you know, might be the odd day here and there to look after things. I've got four children, and I know what my wife and I, you know, have to deal with day to day. It's just times where you need to be pulled out of stuff and do stuff relating to your family. But there is probably a link, isn't there, with the gender pay gap with that? Because there's some people will argue that, well, yeah, that's fine, but, you know, elements of the gender pay gap are there because those people can't work as much or put in as many hours because of this, that, or the other. But it's probably an incredibly strong argument to say that, why should it be a clocking in, clocking out mechanism? That why are you basing the gender pay gap system on clocking in, clocking out? Would you agree with that? What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that whole presenteeism thing is one of the problems. And when I talk about job design, it's like, how do we actually make part-time work something that is perceived as valuable and as acceptable as full-time work? Yeah. And we don't devalue those people. Because what's to say that somebody who does a four-day compressed week doesn't deliver as much as somebody who's in 5 days, or somebody who does 3 days part-time? They're focused, they're delivering, and if they deliver every single thing that you've asked them to deliver and that they need to do for their role, why does it matter what days they work and how they do it, as long as they get the work done?
Absolutely.
And I've worked in organisations where they have that attitude of real, true flexibility. Where I remember asking, oh, what are the hours? And they said, well, and my manager always being surprised at the question about what are the hours, and saying, oh, well, you know, in theory they're this, but, you know, as long as you get your work done.
Then, yeah.
And he meant it, you know, he really meant it. Because when I started working with him, it was like, it's just, you could do your hours as they suited them as long as you got your work done.
Absolutely. And I think as well, and it's a separate topic, but related, but if you want to retain good people, it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, actually, in this instance, but, you know, even men sort of seeing how women that would like that level of flexibility, and vice versa, you know, men would like flexibility for the same reasons probably as well. But working in a culture like that is the kind of culture that you would want to stick around in, and that you'd tell people about as well. It's like, look, you should really think about joining us because this is, you know, it's a great company, and da 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 da, and all that kind of good stuff. Just on the gender pay gap topic, of, you know, just in preparation for us catching up today, I've been looking at a few blogs and articles and lots of different things. But one thing I was really surprised to see is that there's no enforcement mechanism. So reporting is done, and, you know, I noticed that I think it's, 13% of FTSE 100. Only 13% of FTSE 100 employers participate in the reporting guide, and you know, just that if real change kind of, and it does, real change needs to be made, and it's just like, well, realistically, you know, if there isn't an enforcement mechanism, can change be made? Or maybe it can, but how long is it going to take for people just be like, I don't have to do it, but I'll come on the journey if you'd like me to. What are your views on that? Do you think the lack of enforcement is a problem?
Yeah, so I have to say that my views on this have changed over time, because I used to think, oh, quotas are an awful idea and all this. But I actually think since gender pay gap reporting has been around, we've seen a move from just talking shops and talking about the importance of diversity and inclusion and actual action, because there's this real transparent mirror holding up against all organisations and showing people, actually, this is where the issues are. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you saw when the last reports came out, any organisation that was tweeting about their gender pay gap reporting, there was a bot operating on Twitter that was then reporting what their gender pay gap was.
Oh I did it was trending on LinkedIn as well, I think, wasn't it?
I think it was on International Women's Day.
I saw it because it was quite recent, wasn't it? Yeah, I did see that. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, and so that's interesting, isn't it? It's like, okay, if you're gonna say on International Women's Day we support women and gender balance and we're gonna write the barriers, and then they're going, well here's your gender pay gap reporting, what are you actually doing about it? And I thought that was, I mean, I thought that was quite ingenious, actually. And notwithstanding, you know, a lot of companies that are then doing their gender pay gap reporting are doing, you know, they are proactive in trying to address it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that, yeah, I do think you need a bit of stick to make the change, because without the gender pay gap reporting, what we were saying is that the companies just keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And there was no accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And no visibility actually what's going on inside those companies.
Yeah.
And there's no sort of consistency about the way that diversity, inclusion and socioeconomic data and all of those things are actually collected and actioned within organisations. So really some structure and some real hard frameworks around how you do it well,
yeah,
I think would be really beneficial for every organisation.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think it's unfortunate, but I think without a little bit of stick, yeah, the metaphorical stick, obviously, without a little bit of that, you, I think, you know, companies, people, leadership teams, they're so busy with the day-to-day, you know, drudger of just running businesses and doing stuff that they probably want to create some change, but it's always that tomorrow, that manana thing, isn't it? But with a bit of stick, I think you can kind of, you can expedite the process a little bit. And it's kind of, look, the deadline for XYZ process is coming up. If we don't, you know, submit this, you know, 13% of FTSE 100s, you know, filing information on it. It's like, that's a big chunk of companies, just in that, you know, demographic of companies not filing. But I think with a bit of stick, I think a bit more change could probably happen, couldn't it? So with this year's International Women's Day, you know, the theme was break the bias, of course. And, you know, we saw it trending everywhere, LinkedIn, Twitter, all over the place. And there was some, you know, there was some really, really powerful stuff going on. But what can we do as individuals to support this? And I suppose equally, what can organisations do, you know, in this regard, do you think?
I think as individuals, it's being a good ally. So, and you can be an ally regardless of your gender and regardless of your characteristics, I think. So anybody can do that. It's role modelling good behaviours and role modelling actually what does an inclusive behaviour look like. So, you know, whether if you're a senior leader, what does that look like? That looks like, you know, actually taking your paid parental leave.
Yeah.
And role modelling that, you know, that's acceptable. Leaving on time, giving people, you know, these things that create an inclusive culture, acknowledging the difference, and enabling your team and being transparent about the way you go about appointments and interviews and secondments and all of those sorts of things and opportunities people get. Calling out behaviours.
Yeah.
You know, whatever level you are, anyone can do it. Call out a behavior. If you see something that you think is unacceptable, whether that is as small as somebody calling something, calling anybody anything that they don't like being referred to, like a woman, a girl. Some women found that really, really offensive, actually.
Yeah.
Stop being a girl, I was about 12. So stop calling me a girl.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so any of these behaviours or calling out, you know, if somebody, if a woman says something in a meeting room, then a man, you know, says the same thing and he gets heard and the woman doesn't.
Call it out.
Yeah, exactly, call it out. And actually, there's some interesting research that one of our, Ian Smith, who's one of our board members, said, you know, that actually men sometimes don't hear women when they say these things, like genuinely. And I'm reading a book, listening to a book on Audible at the moment, which actually talks about this, how men and women hear differently. So sometimes maybe the men don't actually hear, but actually if you're whether you're a man or a woman in that room, you can say, actually, I think Natalie said that first, and I think it's, and I'd like to second it and think it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
You know, can you be an ally in that way? And then advocate for others, you know, when they're not there, advocate for them to get an opportunity. Maybe if they're not the first person at the top of the list, but maybe you know that they would be good for this opportunity, or they're you think they've got potential, then advocate for them.
Yeah, such a good point. I saw a really interesting article, slightly unrelated, but the sentiment I think is exactly the same. But I don't know if you've seen the Klitschko brothers, you know, Ukrainian. They're on LinkedIn. They're being really vocal, and rightly so, about the whole situation in Ukraine at the moment. And it was a post about, you know, being silent is basically being complicit. You know, if you think that just by sitting there not saying anything is kind of okay, you're not part of the problem, but you're one of the biggest parts of the problem, aren't you? I think if you're silent, you know, because you're just enabling this whole culture to develop, aren't you? So I think you're absolutely right. Calling stuff. And on that note, you know, because when you say call it out, you know, some people might view that as, oh, I'm not very confrontational, you know, and I might feel a bit uncomfortable doing that. But I don't think you need to be confrontational, do you? I think if you are slightly introvert, you can still handle those situations quite delicately, can't you?
Yeah, I don't think I probably call it out sounds like quite an aggressive thing, but maybe it's just a case of, can you gently nudge somebody in the right direction and say, you know, I don't know, if somebody says, if they automatically say, okay, the only woman in the room takes the meeting notes, you know, can you minute? Was it, one way you could stand up for that person is say, actually, I'll volunteer to take the notes.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't have, and that's a way of distracting and you know, sort of normalizing that it doesn't have to be the woman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it makes so much sense. And I think something else you kind of touched on was role models. And then it kind of took me back to you opening up the conversation 10 minutes ago. I think role models and probably that kind of your own household situation as well. Do you know, when we talk about breaking the bias, so many of us in our own family lives, households, you know, just away from work, there's probably a lot of unconscious bias. We talk about breaking the bias, but there's probably a ton of unconscious bias that's going on in our own homes, probably rubbing off on our own children. And it's like this unhealthy stuff of, like, you know, whatever it might be, but where it isn't a level playing field, and just things are happening in that household. You know, you talk about your brother coming home and cooking dinner and ironing, and you all muck in and do that kind of stuff, which is so amazing. But probably sometimes resetting, sitting down, thinking, how do we actually live our lives at home? And are we doing things as they need to be done? Are we being good role models for the kids? Because obviously they're the next wave coming through, and that's where the real change is going to be made, I suppose. But do you think that's a thing, Sonia, around almost doing a little audit on your own situation and how things are running in your own life?
I think it definitely is. And I'll share an anecdote, actually, recently. So my daughter is 21 months old, and I take her to a toddler sensory group. And last week, it was Mother's Day, and so my husband took her. And it was a Mother's Day theme.
Yeah.
Mother's Day theme, and this is run, this group is run by a young woman, and the Mother's Day theme, the activities they had the children doing was, let's dust and hang out the washing and help mummy wash the car. And I was like, and my husband was horrified.
Yeah.
And I was equally horrified, and I was like, hang on, we're just enforcing this idea that women do all of these, I know they're necessary things, but they made it even worse by playing a song that is like The Boy Does Nothing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was the icing on the cake.
Yeah, it was like, oh, God. And, you know, well, what if you're badging yourself as this educational program?
Yeah.
And what message is that sending to our children?
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what you're doing at home. And then you're sending your children into these educational settings. I won't be renewing the.
I was going to say, yeah.
The term. Yeah. But I was, you know, but we will have a chat with, you know, the woman next week about, you know, what do you do for Father's Day? Or, you know, in my role as you know, role modelling that and calling out the behaviour in a very non-confrontational way.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, what made you decide these activities were the right activities for this particular theme?
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me, we had a similar thing, and it was the school photographer came in at one of my kids' schools, and my daughter, I've got four daughters, one of them basically the girls were asked to sort of have this really girly pose, hands on knees, doing this thing, and the boys were sort of very boyish and doing this, you know, they were able to show a bit more personality and, like, you know, a little bit more, I suppose, you know, kind of boyish and you know, just larking around. And the girls, you know, one of my girls came home and she was talking about it, and we had the same kind of conversation. It's kind of just they were just kind of set out in a, you know, the girls do it this way, the boys do it that way. And then a similar thing as well with, you know, two of my young girls now go to Cubs. And I spoke to a few of my friends, like, why don't they go to Girl Guides? And Girl Guides is still a thing, apparently. And they still do really cool stuff. But, you know, I think the boys often did a lot of the really cool, fun stuff. You know, the making the fires and the climbing the trees. And that's the kind of stuff, you know, certainly a couple of my daughters love doing. And it's really nice now because Cubs is really inclusive. And, you know, but there is that still, that perception. It's like, well, you know, your daughter should be doing the girly stuff over there, making the knitted bags and stuff, and the boys can go and make the fires. And but it's nice that the world is actually changing a little bit, and it's becoming a bit more inclusive, which is good. But on that kind of, you know, to round things off, as a final kind of topic, you know, just talking about the importance of leadership in this whole process, and it'd be good just to get your view on that. You know, how important is leadership in creating change?
I think it's vital, actually, and it really matters. It was quite interesting. I listened back to the last two episodes of Employer Bland, and it's this theme. You know, you have to have your senior management team or your senior leader really bought in to this idea of inclusion, actually, yeah, and diversity, and it has to be part of their strategy. You know, if they don't want this to happen,
yeah,
and they don't make space for it to happen, then anything you do in the organization is going to fail.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's so important that senior leader honestly and authentically understands the research, understands the reason why, and wants to make change, and
yeah,
that becomes embedded across the whole organization.
Yeah.
And if you don't make space for it, and you're not willing to make space for it, you might as well not do it.
Yeah.
Because anything you do is not going to succeed. But I think they also have to recognize that there are no quick fixes.
Yeah.
There are lots of easy, non-expensive things that you can do.
Yeah.
But you have to recognize that actually making change and putting diversity and inclusion across your business, across your organization, isn't something that happens like that and you do one or two things and you're done. It's something you need to do sustained over time and continually to really, really make change.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I suppose education, you know, and it's not an age thing either, because I think at any age, you know, there'll be very senior people that have 20, 30, 40 years experience in the workplace, but they've just got this ingrained kind of view of the world and how things work. And I think that can be changed, can't it? It's an education piece across an entire organisation, isn't it? But like you say, if it's not kind of filtering through from the most senior part of a business, creating the change must be so, so difficult. It's just not going to happen, is it?
I definitely don't think it's an age thing at all, actually, because some of the most amazing senior leaders I've met, men, actually, at the latter part of their careers, have been really strong advocates and allies to diversity and inclusion. I think, you know, all of us are individuals and all of us are shaped by our experiences. And so you could be at any stage in your life and still not be an inclusive leader.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is about how people experience life and their ability to empathize with others.
Yeah.
Because I personally, I know I'm in a position of privilege because I grew up in a two-parent household, two working parents with a roof over my head, with food on the table, and I've had lots of opportunities in my life to get an education and progress and being really well supported.
Mm.
And I'm lucky that, you know, my husband is able and willing to take on, you know, domestic responsibilities and all of those things. But that doesn't mean that I don't recognise that for other people and other mm. women, they're in different situations and yeah. that, you know, there are challenges that we need to help women in general and other disadvantaged groups overcome in order that everybody can thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. And something you talked about the previous episode, something that came up in the conversation with Dr. Marcia Goddard, which I wasn't even aware of, but it was around like group bias.
Mm.
And I've never, which I'm really open to, and I'd really like to have some actually, but some unconscious bias training, you know, just because obviously if it's unconscious, you obviously don't know about it. That's the whole thing. And I'd really like to know what's kind of locked up in my own mind, because there must be stuff, you know, there. I'm sure there is in most people. But that group, the decision-making process around group bias. So, you know, if you just so happen to have, you know, just being really kind of, you know, candid, but if there is a group of, you know, 35, 40-year-old white males running a company, you know, group bias tells you statistically they're quite likely, you know, to recruit more, you know, more of those types of people into their business. It's just, that's just a thing. And I think that unconscious bias, I'm trying to unlock some of that, you know, because people, the whole point of it being unconscious is like people aren't realizing they're doing it. And I think that whole unconscious bias kind of training and education piece is unlocking that for people, or unlocking parts of it. I think that's super important to this part of the process, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's, and we go back to that International Women's Day theme, don't we, of break the bias.
Yeah.
Everyone has unconscious bias, and everybody is biased.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, we are shaped by our experiences and our backgrounds and the people around us. And so bias is part and parcel of who we are.
Mm.
That can be helpful. What we can help is understanding actually where our biases are.
Mm.
And then being really mindful about them.
Yeah.
And once we understand what they are and we're mindful when we practice that every single day, then we can start to unlock it. There's a really good book actually called Blind Spot, The Hidden Biases of Good People. Yeah. And that's a really good book I'd recommend for looking at, because it's, you know, it's that thing. It's like, don't beat yourself up because you have bias. Everyone has bias.
Yeah. Just embrace it. Understand it. Yeah.
Exactly that. You know, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And that book I'm reading, I started reading that, Why Gender Matters, actually. I started reading this, just started listening to this morning. And there was a bit on it where they were talking about, you know, how men and women hear differently and smell differently. Like their sense of smell was different. And I was like, okay, listen to that. I was like, that's now unlocked for me why I think the TV's at a perfect volume and my husband thinks it's really low, and he's like, why can't you hear that?
Such a good point though, but your sensory systems are on different frequencies. Yeah,
so he'll put it up to 40 and I'm like, at 20 it's fine. It's like, I can barely hear that. Yeah. You know, how many arguments?
A bit more sympathetic when you're talking to him about it.
Exactly. And this guy was like, oh, in all my years, it's not the thing that leads to divorce isn't like the affairs and the things that you see on TV. It's these things about, you know, these little micro things where we don't understand actually these scientific differences between us, which lead to these misunderstandings. And I was like, oh, that's so, you know, every day we're learning, aren't we?
100%. It's so true. And it's a nice way for us to kind of round things off, I think, because it's, like you say, we've all got that stuff inside of us, haven't we? But it's just kind of starting to embrace that, start to understand it a bit more. And then, you know, just that incremental change we can then make to see a more kind of positive future for this stuff is what it's about. But Sonia, it's been so good catching up with you. I really apologise. I've kind of run over on the time that you allocated to me. Well, that I kind of said it would be. I've run over on that, so I do apologise. But it's been really, really nice catching up.
I love this catch up with you too, Chris. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. And I'll speak to you very soon.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.